So we come to the end of the course, and all roads lead to Jerusalem. So we're going to take everything we've learned so far and combine it into a narrative about today and the future. So the grand thesis of this class is that secret societies control the world. And this is something you can never prove, okay? But let me propose a theory of how we can approach the truth, okay? Theory of truth. If you have a theory, or an idea, or a narrative, and it does these three things, then it approaches the truth. The first is that it connects the past. Okay? So does it help us put the past, things that we know that happened in the past, into a coherent story that we can understand? Okay, that's test number one. Test number two is it explains the present. Does it help us better understand the world we live in? Okay, and the last and the most important is predicts the future. From this narrative, we should be able to make certain predictions about how events should develop. And if these events turn out to happen the way we predict, then we can be more sure that our theory of truth is correct. Now, let's be extremely precise. Just because things turn out the way that we predict doesn't necessarily mean that our theory is 100% correct, okay? Because it's really important to understand that correlation does not necessarily mean causation. Okay? So that's a caveat. No matter how well we predict the future, it doesn't necessarily mean that our theory is 100% correct. But our theory gives us a model to understand the past, the present, and the future. Okay? So, with very little evidence, I'm going to present to you a theory about how the world works. A story about how we got to where we are. And again, this is speculation. Some will call this conspiracy theory. And this is just meant to be a fun class. So take what I say with a grain of salt, okay? Ask good questions, doubt what I say, but what I'll show you is that this theory, even though it doesn't really make much sense and you may not believe it, it does help us connect the past, explain the present, and predict the future, okay? All right, so without further ado, let's go into this theory. So you remember Jacob Frank, who founded the Sabbatine Frankist movement, okay? And he will convert to the Catholic religion, and he will encourage his followers to also follow him into Catholic religion and also to infiltrate secret societies. One of his friends, one of his patrons, is Mayer Rothschild, who is founder, of course, of the Rothschild banking dynasty, which we discussed last class. He will introduce Jacob Frank to another person named Adam Weishaupt in Bavaria, okay, in present-day Germany. All right, now, Adam Weishaupt, he is actually a former Jesuit, okay, he's a member of the Catholic Church. He's also a Jew, okay, and again, we don't have any evidence that these three actually know each other. But this is a theory, all right? So let's assume they knew each other. What they will do together is create a new organization called the Illuminati. And this organization is what controls the world, the Illuminati. Now, there is a legend that Adam Weishaupt, after he created the Illuminati, he encouraged his followers to infiltrate another organization called the Freemasons. And these were extremely prominent members of European society. Okay, these were intellectuals like Goethe. These were nobility. These were bankers. And so this is the framework that controls the world, okay? The Illuminati was able to penetrate the Freemasons. So now you have an alliance of the Jesuits, the Jews, the Septuagint Francis, the Catholics, and the Freemasons, okay? And this, so this is the alliance of secret societies. Now, there is a legend that what happened is that Adam Weishaupt, he was eventually arrested for conspiracy by the authorities. And so the organization, the Illuminati, has been disbanded. It no longer exists. But there are others who argue that's not what happened. In fact, it was Adam Weishaupt himself who spread the legend that there was a secret organization called the Illuminati. Okay? So the entire thing was to generate publicity. But in reality, the Illuminati was not disbanded, and it still exists today. So why would they do this? And the reason why is that secret societies, like every organization, depends on publicity for recruitment. Okay? So it's free publicity. If you read a newspaper that there's a secret organization that's trying to conquer the world and which the authorities don't like, then a lot of people will be like, how do I join this organization? Right? And that's what happened. All right? So the irony about secret societies is they have a structure, which is like a triangle, okay? At the very top is the leadership. This leadership is secret. You don't know who they are. You don't know what they do. Okay, but they usually come from very noble families. We call these the 13 families. Okay, then at the very bottom are just the public members, and they think that what they do is just good stuff. Okay, so the Freemasons, they actually don't know what the leadership does. The key is the middle management. These people, okay, these people are the ones who do all the work. And these people are selected for ambition. In other words, for power, they're willing to sell their souls. All right? Okay. So when you have different secret societies together, a major problem that you have is coordination. And the idea here is you have different leaders, and how do you get them to work together? Also, after these leaders die, how do you ensure that the new leaders will coordinate together? And the answer to this problem is the idea of eschatology. Okay, we'll discuss eschatology. But eschatology comes from the Greek word eschaton, which means the end. So eschatology means your understanding of how the world ends, of how to create paradise on earth. And what I will show you is that even though these different groups have different eschatologies, there are convergence points which allows them to work together. Okay? So let's go over the major eschatologies. And remember, what's really important to understand is that these eschatologies are often secret. They sometimes change, and the details will be different. But so I'm going to present to you more or less a general understanding of different eschatologies, okay? So let's start with the easiest, which is a Jewish eschatology. What did the Jews believe? Well, the Jews believed that because they disobeyed God, because they worshiped false idols, because they sinned, they were expelled by God from their homeland, Jerusalem, to wander the earth, which creates the Jewish diaspora. But eventually what will happen is that a Jewish Messiah will emerge to take the Jews back to Jerusalem, okay? And he will reconstitute the nation of Israel. He will recreate Israel, and then he will rebuild Solomon's temple. Why? Because Solomon's temple is where God lives, and it is where the people of Israel make sacrifices to Yahweh in order to show their devotion to Yahweh. So Solomon's temple is really important. There will be something called the War of Gog and Magog, where basically the entire world unites against Israel. Okay? And the war of Gog and Magog will be led by the Antichrist, the anti-Messiah, the false prophet. We don't know what Gog and Magog represent, okay? What the Bible says is these are people from the north, but that could be anyone. And certain Jewish scholars have interpreted Gog and Magog to represent Russia and Iran. Okay? This is important because of what's happening today. Okay? But of course, when it seems as though the enemies of Israel, Gog and Magog, when it seems that they are about to win, God will intervene and ensure that Israel wins. And this will usher in something called the Messianic Age. When Israel becomes the most dominant nation on earth, when it becomes the light of nations, when it becomes the light of the world. Okay? Does that make sense? So that is the Jewish eschatology. And most Jews believe this. Then you have the Frankists. Okay? And the Frankists, Sabbatine Frankists, they make important changes to this eschatology. Okay? The first important change is the Jews believe that the Messiah will come when the time is right. So most rabbis believe that the Messiah will come in the year 6000 in the Jewish calendar, which is about the year 2040 in our calendar, which is about 200 years later. Okay? So still a long time away. But the Frankists believe that the Messiah has already come, right? Sometimes Zevi. And then you have Jacob Frank. So they believe that, the Messiah is already here, okay, which means that the war can start. Second thing that they believe is that you don't wait for God to intervene. You can accelerate the Messianic Age by sinning, right? Because by sinning, what you're doing is you are defying Satan. It's Satan who created this world. And by sinning, you're defying his laws. You're defying his authority. And this will create more chaos. And you will reveal how evil this world is. You'll accelerate the collapse. Okay, which will force God to intervene. And then during the Messianic Age, what happened is material pleasure. Okay, so rather than everyone being spiritual and pure, we'll have a lot of sex. We will have feast. We will live forever. Okay? That's a Frankist interpretation of this eschatology. Okay? Does that make sense? Then you have the Christian Zionists. Okay? The Christian Zionists. I'll explain who the Christian Zionists are later on, okay? But what the Christian Zionists will do is they will take this Jewish eschatology but interpret it in a Christian context, okay? So, for the Christians, they believe that, yes, all this will happen, okay? The Jews will establish the Messianic Age. But this is really the Antichrist system. Okay? The Antichrist, who is the Jewish Messiah, will establish a world government that will dominate the world. And he will establish something called the Mark of the Beast. Mark of the Beast is basically digital ID. Okay? So just think of a microchip in your forehead or wherever that, and so you can be tracked, you can be monitored. Okay? So basically an AI surveillance system. Okay? So this is what the Messianic Age of the Jews will look like, but it's the Antichrist system. And eventually what will happen is that the people will rebel against Israel, and this will lead to something called the War of Gog and Magog. Okay? And when it seems as though Israel is about to be defeated in the Battle of Armageddon, okay, what will happen is that Jesus will return. Jesus will return, second coming, and he will take all the Christians to heaven. It's called the rapture. And then he will kill a third of the Jews, a third will convert, and this will usher the Messianic Age, okay? So this is the Christian interpretation. It's called Christian Zionism. But as you can see, what's really important is the Jews first achieve their eschatology before the Christians can achieve theirs. The Christians need to use the Jews as a tool to achieve the second coming. Okay? Does that make sense? All right. And what's really important is for the Solomon's Temple. Solomon's Temple is where the Al-Aqsa Mosque is right now. So in other words, for this eschatology to happen, you will need to destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is the third holiest site in the Islamic world. And you can imagine how angry Muslims will be. And this might initiate the war of Gog and Magog. Okay? Another important thing about this eschatology that's really important is you need the Jews to return to Israel. And how do you get the Jews to return to Israel? Anti-Semitism. Okay? So not only do you have to destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is, you know, not very nice, but you also have to promote anti-Semitism around the world to force the Jews to return. That's another part of this plan. Okay? As you can see, this is not a nice plan. It causes a lot of death, it causes a lot of suffering, causes a lot of persecution, but both Jews and Christians believe that for the Messianic age to come, there has to be an age of tribulation, there has to be the Antichrist, there has to be the war of Gog and Magog. Okay, there has to be Armageddon, basically. All right, so is this making sense? Okay, this is the eschatology, which is a script, which is a plan that these secret societies must implement in order to achieve heaven on earth. The last people I want to talk about are the Freemasons. Okay, the Freemasons believe that they are, the Freemasons believe that they are of the Enlightenment. Freemasons. They are, and they practice a new philosophy called deism. What makes deism different is that it's an Enlightenment philosophy. So the idea is that God did create the world, the universe. That's why we are here. But then God left. And now, because of free will, free choice, we can do whatever we want. Okay? And our mission is basically to achieve godhood through science, through open debate, through rational thinking. And what are the signs of godhood? How do we know that we've become God? When we're able to do three things, okay? The first thing is to warp reality. Okay? To basically manipulate the essence of matter. And we've been able to do that because of something called the nuclear bomb. Right? So then we've achieved that. So in other words, when the nuclear bomb was a Freemason project to achieve godhood. But not only that, after they achieved the nuclear bomb, they had to use it to show that they are God, right? Because as we discussed before, at the end of World War II, the Americans were firebombing Japan, the war was over. They didn't have to drop the bomb, but they dropped the bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Okay? That's number one. Number two is, they need to kill a king to show that they are God. Because the king is divinity, right? God gives birth to kings, only gods can kill a king. And who did they kill? JFK. Okay, again, this is conspiracy theory, okay? And the third thing which a god does is create life. Okay? And this is something that they haven't done yet. But we can imagine what this is. This is AI. Okay? So these are the three missions of the Freemasons. And they've achieved the first two. They've warped reality by creating a nuclear bomb. They've killed a king, JFK. And the third thing they want to do is create life, which is AI. Okay? In fact, we can also guess where this AI will take place. Why? Because let's look at a map. Okay? Let's look at a map. This is the equator. 33 degrees north of the equator are four places. Okay? Now, 33 degrees is very important in Freemasonry. There are 33 degrees in Scottish Rite Freemasonry. It's a very sacred number. Right? So, 33 degrees north of the equator, you have four places. The first place is Trinity Site, New Mexico in America, which is where they tested the atomic bomb. Okay? You go over across the Pacific to Japan, 33 degrees north is Hiroshima and Nagasaki. All right. 33 degrees north in America is Dallas, Texas, where they killed JFK. So the last mission of Freemasons to achieve their vision for the world is creating AI, right? Now the question is, where would they do it? And the answer is 33 degrees north of the equator, right? And where is that? Jerusalem. So this is the end game, guys. The Freemasons will create artificial intelligence in Jerusalem, and this will become the world government. Again, this is just conspiracy theory. Don't believe this. This is just for fun, okay? But if it happens like this, then that's interesting, okay? But that is the grand plan, to create a world government in Jerusalem. And where's the center of this world government? Solomon's Temple. Because the Freemasons believe that their founder was the one who created Solomon's Temple. So by recreating Solomon's Temple, you close the circle, okay? So again, this is very complicated, and I don't want to get too many things wrong, but this is the general gist of it. And so what we can see is that all roads lead to Jerusalem. Now that is the case, okay? Then this helps us to understand certain things about the world that otherwise don't make any sense. All right, so let's go over them. The first thing that doesn't make any sense is America's war on terror. Yes, I understand that America was attacked on 9/11. I understand that. But why did that go attack Libya and Iraq and all these other places that have nothing to do with Al-Qaeda? Okay? And the answer is they're trying to create something called the Greater Israel Project. They're trying to have Israel become Pax Judaica, the grand power in the Middle East, because that's important in all secret societies. Israel must become the dominant power in the Middle East, okay? So this helps us understand why the war of terror happened the way it did. That's number one. Number two is, right now, America is threatening to attack Iran. Why would they do that? Because in order for Pax Judaica to come into being, Iran must be taken out of the equation. Iran must be destroyed. Then, if that would happen, there'd be no challenger to the power of Pax Judaica, okay? Does that make sense? All right? The third thing is Silicon Valley and AI. So right now, you have AI, ChatGPT, which doesn't really do anything, okay? It makes cool images on your computer and helps you cheat in school. Okay, that's about it. Doesn't really do anything else. And if you don't go to school, then you're like, why am I using ChatGPT? Okay? And you're not gonna pay a lot of money for it. So AI, it's a dead end. But at the same time, all around the world, everyone's spending billions, trillions of dollars on data centers. Right? So everyone's putting money into AI. But then you're like, well, how can you make money off that? If you think the answer is for you to use AI, well, it's hard to make money off that. But if the answer is to create an AI surveillance state, that makes a lot more sense, right? So what is a surveillance state? Very easy, guys. We have it in China, okay? It's digital ID and digital currency. And the idea is that everything you buy, everything you do will be tracked. And so they can create a profile on you. And this profile will tell the government who you are, how you behave, what you think. Not only that, the government can also manipulate how you think, how you behave. Okay? And this is, of course, called the mark of the beast. Right? And so that's what Pax Judaica is. Pax Judaica is a global AI surveillance system. Okay? It also helps us explain immigration in Europe. Okay? Because the war on terror, you've sent these millions of refugees from Libya, Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq into Europe, which is causing a lot of conflict in Europe. Why would that happen? Well, for Pax Judaica to come into being, you need to destroy the world. Okay? So, I'm not saying this is true, but I'm saying that if the goal is Pax Judaica, it does help us connect the dots. It helps us explain why things are happening the way they are. Okay? Also, the last thing is anti-Semitism, okay? So you may have noticed, if you're online, people don't like the Jews. And this is like out of nowhere. After October 7th, you have anti-Semitism over the internet. Now, I have criticized Israel before, okay? But anti-Semitism is not the same thing as anti-Zionism, right? Zionism is the belief that Israel is a chosen people and the promised land and all that, okay? But Judaism as religion, it's perfectly fine. So why would people not care about the difference between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, okay? And you can argue it's all purposeful because remember, the part of the plan is to force the Jews to return to Israel. That's very important for this plan to work out, okay? It's key. That's why you are seeing so much anti-Semitism around the world today. Okay? And the last thing, of course, and this is something we'll discuss, is something called the red heifers. So red heifers are red cows that are perfectly genetically modified. And you need the red heifers in order to, you have to sacrifice the red heifers to purify the ground in order to reconstruct the Solomon's temple, okay? And guess what? They've already sacrificed the red heifers. So it seems as though everything is in place. All right? They're moving towards Pax Judaica. All right. So let's discuss what will happen in the short term and in the long term if Pax Judaica really is the end goal, okay? So when you have Israel fighting wars everywhere, okay? The main enemy right now is Iran. In Europe, you have the Europeans about to go to war with Russia in Ukraine. America right now is threatening to attack Venezuela, okay? South America. You have 10% of the U.S. Navy in the Caribbean, and they're about to attack Venezuela. You have China and Japan at conflict. You have India here. And you have Africa. Okay? So what's going to happen in the short term? Okay. Well, what we know is that Europe is planning to go to war with Russia. Okay? Europe is about to go to war with Russia. Okay? At the same time, you have a lot of immigrants in Europe. And this is going to create civil wars in Europe. Okay, civil war. So you have both war with Russia as well as civil war. So Europe is kind of screwed, okay? America has the same situation where the left-right divide is so polarized that eventually they'll go to war. If you read the news, you may have heard about the shootings at Brown University, as well as this MIT physicists who were shot, okay? So random violence will be more and more common in the United States. And you can argue that it's all deliberate because the idea is this. Let's just say you have a jar. You put red ants in the jar and black ants in a jar. They get along fine. But you take the jar and you just shake it up, and now they're at war with each other, okay? That's what's happening where the left and right, they really don't like each other. They don't talk to each other, and they refuse to engage in debate with each other. But then they're not going to fight each other unless there's violence, in which case their tribal mentality takes over and they start killing each other. Okay, so we can expect civil war in the United States. Then you're going to have the Americans start to attack Venezuela and possibly other countries in South America. So America is in for a bad time, okay? China, yeah, I mean, Japan and China and India, they're all going to have conflicts with each other. But also what we should expect is that America starts to embargo China, meaning America uses its sea power to block China from accessing resources from overseas. And China imports most of its oil and a lot of its food. So if there's a blockade of China, you can expect the Chinese economy to really suffer, okay? All right. But, and then what we can expect to happen is America at some point will go to war with Iran. And this will destroy both countries, okay? Iran will not lose this war, but it won't win this war either, because America is just going to bomb the crap out of Iran. It's just going to send Iran back decades. But America will lose this war, but this is important because if America loses this war, it's forced out of the Middle East. And once it's forced out of the Middle East, all its military assets goes to Israel, which creates the Pax Judaica. Yeah, does that make sense, guys? That's the plan. Okay, now you have Pax Judaica. And what Pax Judaica will do is start to control the world. Because through chaos and conflict, Pax Judaica can make a lot of money, right? Because Pax Judaica, what's going to happen is that you have these technology companies like Google, they're going to move over to Pax Judaica and build a global surveillance state. You have civil wars, you need AI to control people. If you're going to war with Russia, you need weapons, okay? But you also need financing as well. So you can expect a lot of banks to move to Israel, and it's possible Israel becomes now the global reserve currency because everyone is trading with Israel. If you're Russia, you need to trade your resources, right? Oil, energy, and grain, okay? So Russia controls a third of the world's carbohydrates. Guess what, guys? Israel controls Africa. So what will happen is that Russia and other countries will sign a trade agreement with Israel, and Israel becomes a center of global trade. Okay? Does that make sense? So this is how Pax Judaica will profit. And remember that Israel has the world's best intelligence agency, the Mossad. And what they can do is go around the world and create as much chaos as possible. Okay? So while the world is burning, Israel, Pax Judaica, is profiting. And that's what the future looks like for the next 10, 20 years. And this will, of course, lead to the rise of the Antichrist, who will take control of Pax Judaica and force the world to eventually attack Israel in something called the War of Gog and Magog. And this will, of course, lead to the second coming of Jesus. So that's a grand plan, okay? All right? Any questions? Does it make sense to you guys? I know it's evil. And you know what? I could be a complete idiot, okay? I could just making all this up. But you have to ask yourself three questions. Does it connect the past? Does it explain what's happened in the past? Does it explain what's happening today? And will these things happen in the future, okay? So we haven't lived with the future yet, but you can see the trends. Yeah, Vincent? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Like you said that AI, God create lives and create AI at Jerusalem. But I think like ChatGPT, they already create AI in Silicon Valley.
Okay. ChatGPT is not AI. Oh, it's an LLM, okay? Like artificial intelligence is a thinking, conscious, sentient force. That's like God. So they're trying to create God in Jerusalem, okay? Out of Solomon's temple. Does that make sense? Okay? Any more questions before we go to the PPT? But you guys understand what's happening, right? Okay, let's go to the PPT. And again, guys, it's all just speculation on my part. I have no idea what will happen, okay? Like everyone else. Okay? All right, guys, the Promised Land. This is the Greater Israel Project. Okay, this is what Yahweh promised to Abraham in the Bible. As you can see, it's pretty huge. It's the entire Middle East. It extends from the Nile to the Euphrates in Iraq. Okay, it's a huge area. And if you say the Israelites are, sorry, the Israelis are want to achieve the Greater Israel Project, they call you a conspiracy theorist. So, like, we don't want that, okay? But explain two things to me. First of all, why is the Greater Israel map on a chevron of an IDF soldier, okay? These are soldiers, Israeli soldiers, and they wear the insignia of the Greater Israel Project, okay? This is the map. Also, if you look at the flag of Israel, there are two blue lines, right? These represent rivers, the Nile and the Euphrates, all right? So if it's a conspiracy theory, then how do you explain these two things? All right, but I want to argue to you, you know what? Pax Judaica, it's not about Israel or the Greater Israel Project. What it is ultimately is an alliance of transnational capital, multinationals like Google and Meta, and intelligence agencies that will be based in Jerusalem, okay? So secret societies will be based in Jerusalem, and they will use it as a headquarters for their global conspiracy. But, and they will profit from chaos and conflict in around the world because they think that this is the culmination of the prophecy. But it doesn't necessarily mean that Jews will be in charge. Okay, does that make sense, guys? Okay, so it's a much more complicated idea than people think it is. All right, so where do we get this stupid idea from? Okay, it actually starts with Isaac Newton. So Isaac Newton, you learn about him in physics class, you learn that he's the founder of calculus, you learn about Newtonian mechanics, okay? But actually, these are just side projects of his. That was not his focus. He spent most of his life focusing on reading the Bible to understand the grand plan of God. And he wrote a book called Observations upon the Prophecy of Daniel and the Apocalypse of St. John, okay? That's where his focus was. And he believed he found the Bible code. And he was a member of secret societies. He was a member of the British elite. And if someone like Isaac Newton is telling you, like, this is what the Bible says, and this guy who found a calculus and who developed the three laws of motion, you'll probably believe him. Okay? But the guy was insane. All right, so what he did was he just looked at certain sections of the Bible and put them together into a story about, okay? And so this is Ezekiel 37. And so Ezekiel 37 says that the Lord God tells the prophet Ezekiel that, yes, I've scattered the people of Israel, but now I bring them back together. And then I will make your nation great. I will make flowers bloom. I will make your city prosperous, okay? And this is all in the Bible. Ezekiel 38 says that eventually there'll be a war of Gog and Magog when Gog and Magog will come invade Israel, but God will come and defend Israel and he will destroy Gog and Magog. And if you read the Bible, we don't have time to read the Bible, but it's really violent language. So the Israelis believe that for heaven to come, there first must be hell on earth. All right. So Newton's plan to force second coming, okay? And this becomes the basis of Freemasonry, right? Freemasons were really invented in order to promote the second planet coming plan. The Freemasons were first in England, but then where did they go? They went to America. Many of the founding fathers of America, including Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, were Freemasons. So America was founded in many ways to achieve this plan, okay? So what's the plan? Well, you have to first reconstitute the nation of Israel and make it prosper, okay? It's really important that it becomes very wealthy. And in fact, Israel is one of the wealthiest countries in the world. You have to have the Jewish diaspora return to Israel, and that means you promote prosperity, but you also have to promote a Jewish conspiracy. So while you're letting the Jews get rich in the West, you're also promoting the idea that the Jews control the world. Okay, it's all part of this plan. You have to rebuild Solomon's temple. You have to have the war of Gog and Magog. You have to have the Antichrist. You have to have Armageddon. Okay, and this will force Jesus to return and usher in the millennium age. Okay, does that make sense? That's a grand plan. And unfortunately, most of these things have been achieved. Okay, these are the Freemasons, and the top leadership is focused on achieving this plan developed by Newton. Eventually, what happened is that Adam Weishaupt will found the Illuminati with Jacob Frank, and they will infiltrate Freemasons. And why do the Freemasons allow Adam Weishaupt and the Illuminati to infiltrate the Freemasons? Because Jews are an important part of this plan. They need Jews in place. They need Jews to go back to Jerusalem and build the nation of Israel and conquer the world in order for this plan to work out, okay? So it is a alliance between the Freemasons and the Illuminati. This is Rothschild, and Rothschild will establish many branches throughout Europe, okay? Jacob Frank, we've discussed in the past. But this is a major alliance, okay? All right. Once we understand that it's the secret societies and their grand plan in motion, now it helps us understand why things turn out the way they did. For example, now we understand where British philosophy comes from. We discussed last class about John Locke, David Hume, Bentham, Mill, Marx, Darwin, okay? These were all thinkers sponsored by Britain to promote a certain understanding of the world that is materialistic and which will build foundation for the second coming, okay? So John Locke said private property is what's important. David Hume, philosophy is pointless. Don't think about God, just focus on material wealth. Jeremy Bentham, utility is everything, okay? How do we know what's good, what's right? If it benefits someone, okay? John Stuart Mill, liberty of the individual is everything. So making sure that people are individually happy as opposed to being spiritual. Karl Marx, freedom of the individual from material want. Charles Darwin, man is a monkey, okay? So this is promoting a certain worldview that will help promote the second coming. All right. So, look, if you just look at science, there are certain things they study and certain things they don't study. For example, they spend a lot of time studying particle physics. Who cares? Can I ask you this question? Who cares about particle physics? They spend billions, trillions of dollars on this stupid thing. They built something called the CERN particle collider to figure out what the underlying atom is, okay? Is it really important? Isn't solving world poverty more important? I don't know. You can take all that money you spend on a stupid collider and make sure everyone in the world has enough to eat. They don't want to do that, though. All right? You also have focus on outer space, AI, okay? So the very direction of science, it's very, very specific, okay? They're trying to achieve a materialist understanding of the world. And also, if you try to... this is the collider, okay? I don't understand why they're spending trillions of dollars on this stupid thing. This is the current collider, LHC, in Switzerland, and now they're going to build a bigger one. Like, and you see how big it is, right? What are they trying to do here? Are they really trying to figure out particle physics? Maybe, maybe not. All right? All right, guys. Jacob Frank. What Jacob Frank tells us is... there are different dimensions, okay? And another dimension is Big Brother, who's a friend of his, but he's stuck in his dimension. He's trying to come to our dimension, but he needs our help. So what's CERN particle accelerator trying to do, right? Is it really trying to discover particle physics, or is it really trying to break the dimensions, like they did with the nuclear bomb? Okay, do you understand? People believe the nuclear bomb, it was really about creating an interdimensional portal for Big Brother to come into. And now people are saying, is it possible the CERN particle accelerator is trying to bring in these interdimensional demons to our world to conquer us, to enslave us? That would make a lot more sense than particle physics, okay, guys? All right. What does science not study, okay? It doesn't study consciousness, which is a number one problem in the world, right? Wouldn't it be nice to know how we think? Okay? Wouldn't it be nice to know how I come up with the ideas I do in class and teach it to you, and how you respond to my ideas, which is a much more basic problem in particle physics. We don't do that, guys, okay? There's absolutely no money or very limited funding in the study of consciousness. Imagination, intuition, anything in material spirit, okay? Like ghosts or spirits, we don't study at all. Religious truth, we also don't study kindness, happiness, and love, okay? We don't study what is the basis of these things. We don't care. We don't study telepathy, connection. We don't study intelligence of animals and plants. We also don't study ancient architecture and civilizations. So if you go to these ancient sites like Göbekli Tepe, we discussed Göbekli Tepe before, we only have uncovered 5% of it, okay? We don't care what is underneath Göbekli Tepe, because it's possible that if we were to discover everything, it would refute traditional paradigms of the world, including evolution. All right? So science is focused on spreading one particular paradigm about the world and discounting everything else. All right? So why is that? Okay. Another thing that's really interesting about science is it hasn't really improved in the past 50, 70 years. We're spending billions, trillions of dollars on science, but we haven't really improved science that much. There have been no great discoveries. And there are three reasons why, okay? The first is specialization. You're only allowed to focus on one very specific problem. And without generalists, without being able to think of science very broadly, it's hard to come up with new discoveries. All right? The other thing is you have a very strict bureaucracy. So as a scientist, you spend most of your time actually applying for funding. You actually don't spend most of your time trying to solve the problems of the universe. And the third thing is credentialism, where if you don't have a certain PhD and you don't belong to a major research university, you're not allowed to talk about science. Okay? So because of these three reasons, it's hard to do science. It's hard to discover truth. And that's the intention. The intention is to prevent people from discovering the truth of the world. Okay? Now, science is not very good at creating new things, but it's very good at faking things. Okay? It's very good at faking things. Also, guys, it's possible they might fake something else called an alien invasion. Science is very good at that. It's not good at creating spaceships, but it's good at faking spaceships. Okay? There's a difference. All right, so this is Thomas Kuhn, and he wrote something called The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. And he just says it's natural for paradigms, new ideas, it takes a very long time for paradigms to take shape. But then if that's the case, how do we explain Einstein? The moment he proposed relativity, boom, he's famous, world famous, okay? How do you explain Darwin? The moment he proposed evolution, boom, he's world famous. It's really strange this way, okay? And so one explanation is secret societies control the world. They have a certain eschatology, and they are promoting things that push their eschatology forward. And that's how the world works, okay? So if you think, okay, all right. We also discussed last class the idea of Conspeak, written by this Jew in Britain who becomes the first Jewish prime minister, Benjamin Disraeli. And it's about how Jews control the world. And we were like, why is this happening? And I said, because it's part of the plan. Because not only are Jews supposed to prosper in the West, but people are supposed to think that they are part of a grand conspiracy, okay? Because the end goal is anti-Semitism and force them to return to Israel. Okay? All right. So, with this plan in motion, obviously these secret societies cannot themselves come out and propose this plan, the secret societies. Okay? So they have different individuals do this for them. This is Theodor Herzl, who's considered the founder of Zionism. The idea of Zionism is that Jews deserve their own homeland, preferably in Palestine, okay? Current day Israel. And he wrote a book called The State for the Jews, okay? And it was heavily promoted in 1896. You also have something called the Scofield Bible. Okay, which is to take Newton's plan and turn it and then explain how the Bible and the plan work together. Okay? And this is called premillennial dispensationalism. Okay? Don't worry about the idea, okay? Okay. All right. So 1917, you have Lord Rothschild, okay? Balfour, the British government, is sending a letter to Lord Rothschild saying, I have the pleasure of allowing you to create a homeland for the Jews. Okay? So again, this is part of the plan where the British want to create Israel, but they're blaming the Jews for it. Okay? They're saying, it's the Jews who want to create Israel. Okay, so in 1948, they create the nation of Israel. Okay, this is Theodor Herzl. And remember, okay, the nation of Israel, it is not part of this grand plan. It's what the Jews aspire to. It's what the Jews want. It's all initiated by the Jews, okay? This is really important. Okay. Now, one thing that they say, one thing that the Israelis say is that we deserve Palestine because this is what God promised to us in the Bible. We are descendants of the Israelites. We are Hebrew. We're all one blood. Now, the great thing about Jews, okay, and this is why I have tremendous respect for Jews, is these Jewish intellectuals, they are first and foremost committed to the truth. So this is Arthur Kessler, okay, who is a Jewish intellectual, and he wrote something called The 13th Tribe. And this book, what he tells us is, this is nonsense, okay? The Jews, most of them don't come from Israel. They don't come from the Middle East. They come from Ukraine, okay? And this is called The 13th Tribe. And it explains how, what happened, okay? So, Amber, could you read, please? All right, could you read this passage, okay?
At the beginning of the 8th century, the world was polarized between the two superpowers representing Christianity and Islam.
So these two powers are the Byzantine Empire as well as the Abbasid Caliphate, okay?
Their ideological doctrines were welded to power politics pursued by the classical methods of propaganda, subversion, and military conquest. The Khazar Empire represented a third force, which had proved equal to either of them, both as an adversary and an ally. But it could only maintain its independence by accepting neither Christianity nor Islam, for either choice would have automatically subordinated it to the authority of the Roman Emperor of the Caliph of Baghdad.
Okay, so do you understand this idea? It's very simple. You have these three powers in Eurasia. You have the Byzantines, and you have the Abbasids, okay? Byzantines are Christian. The Abbasids are Muslim. And these are the two dominant religions. And the Khazars think they're a power. And if they convert to, right now they're pagan, if they convert to Christianity, they now have to obey Byzantine. If they convert to Islam, they now have to obey the Abbasids. So they don't do either, okay? So they pick another religion, which is Judaism, right? And it makes sense because Judaism is the first religion. It is from Judaism in which you have Islam as well as Christianity. And therefore, Judaism is superior. And therefore, we Khazars are superior, okay? So this makes perfect sense, right? Keep on going.
There had been no lack of efforts by either court to convert Khazars to Christianity or Islam, but all they resulted in was the exchange of diplomatic courtesies, dynamic intermarriages, and shifting military alliances based on mutual self-interest. Relying on its military strength, the Khazar kingdom, with its hinterland of vassal tribes, was determined to preserve its position as the third force, leader of the uncommitted nations of the steppes.
Okay. So the Khazar Empire is very ambitious as well. Okay, it sees itself as a great power. Eventually, it wants to unite the different tribes of steppe nations and conquer the world. But to do that, it needs its own distinct identity. So it's not going to convert to Christianity or Islam. All right, keep on going.
At the same time, there are intimate contacts with the Byzantium and the Caliphate had taught the Khazars that their primitive shamanism was not only barbaric and outdated compared to the great monotheistic creeds, but also unable to confer on the leaderships the spiritual and legal authority which the rulers of the two theocratic world powers, the Caliph and the Emperor, enjoyed. Yet the conversion to either creed would have meant submission the end of independence and thus would have defeated its purpose. What could have been more logical than to embrace a third creed, which was uncommitted towards either of the two, yet represented of the venerable foundation of both?
Yeah, okay, this is a very simple idea. Monotheism is very important because the idea of one God gives ultimate authority to one person, which allows for the creation of empire, right? Otherwise, every god is equal and you have like a lot of gods. So it's important to have one God. You have three religions that celebrate one God. You have Islam, which is doing very well. You have Christianity, which is doing really well. You have Judaism. And no one's practicing Judaism, so let's just take it for ourselves. Really simple, okay? So this was a mass conversion of an entire people to Judaism, okay? Does that make sense? All right, and so this is what the map looks like. As you can see, it's a huge area. This is Ukraine, okay? Modern-day Ukraine, the Khazar Empire. Then you have the Byzantines and you have the Abbasids. And the Khazars saw themselves as equal to both. They want to maintain a separate identity. Okay, they don't want to be consumed by either empire. Okay, and this is another map that shows Khazaria. Okay, and then, yeah. All right, can you keep on reading? The only mercy.
The only mercy shown by history to those who took to flight or were driven to it was the existence of Khazaria, both before and after the conversion.
Okay, so it doesn't make sense. So Jews are being persecuted in Europe all the time. They have no place to go except Khazaria, which is now the Jewish homeland. And the Jews know about Khazaria because they're traders, they're merchants, they're part of the diaspora. So information is spreading about Khazaria, and they all go there. And these Jews are heavily intellectual, and they bring their cultural practices to Khazaria. Also, we discussed this before. What is a Jewish person? A Jewish person is not someone who is born Jewish. A Jewish person is someone who reads the Bible and accepts the cultural practice of the Jews. And therefore, it's really easy to become a Jew. Keep on going.
Before, it was a refugee haven. After, it became a kind of national home. The refugees were products of a superior culture and were no doubt an important factor in creating that cosmopolitan, tolerant outlook, which so impressed the Arab chroniclers quoted before. Their influence and no doubt their proselytizing zeal. This was an age when converting unbelievers by force or persuasion was a foremost concern. That the Jews too indulged in it is shown by the fact that since the rule of Justinian, Byzantine law threatened severe punishments for the attempt to convert Christians to Judaism, while for Jews molesting converts to Christianity, the penalty was death by fire. Scharf, P25, would have made itself felt first and foremost at the court and among leading notables. They may have combined in their missionary efforts theological arguments and messianic prophecies with a shrewd assignment of the political advantages that the Khazars would derive from adopting a neutral religion. The exiles also brought with them Byzantine arts and crafts, superior methods in agriculture and trade, and the square Hebrew alphabet.
Okay, so not only did the Khazars wanted their own religion that was distinct from Byzantines and the Abbasids, but they also wanted the skills, the knowledge, the culture, the science, the medicine that the Jews would bring with them. Okay, so this marriage made perfect sense. Okay, so from a logical perspective, this makes complete sense. Unfortunately, you're not allowed to discuss this, okay? Because it's embarrassing for the nation of Israel. They're not saying this is not what happened, because there's a lot of evidence to suggest this is what happened. They're saying you're not allowed to discuss this. Okay? All right, can you keep on reading? That's ethnically, the Semitic tribes.
Ethically, the Semitic tribes on the waters.
Okay, okay. So Khazaria is around for a long time, a few centuries, but then eventually they become conquered by the Mongols. And the Mongols are ferocious, they're killing a lot of people. So these Khazarians have no choice but to immigrate over to East Asia. Sorry, to Eastern Europe, okay? And they become the European Jews. Alright? And so what Kessler is going to do is he's going to show evidence to suggest that they all came from one place. All these different European Jews, they have similar cultural practices, which means they originate from a similar place, okay? Can you keep on going? Ethnically?
Ethnically, the Semitic tribes on the waters of the Jordan and the Turco-Khazar tribes on the Volga were, of course, miles apart. But they had at least two important formative factors in common. Each lived at a focal junction where the great trade routes connecting east and west, north and south intersect, a circumstance which predisposed them to become nations of traders, of enterprising travelers, or rootless cosmopolitans, as hostile propaganda has unaffectionately labeled them. But at the same time, their exclusive religion fostered a tendency to keep themselves and stick together. To establish their own communities with their own places of worship, schools, residential quarters, and ghettos, originally self-imposed, in whatever town or country they settled. This rare combination of wanderlust and ghetto mentality, reinforced by messianic hopes and chosen race pride, both ancient Israelites and medieval Khazars shared, even though the latter traced their descendant not to Shem, but to Japheth.
So genetically speaking, the Khazarians and the Israelites have nothing in common, okay? But they share similar culture. And that's who we ultimately are. We're products of culture as opposed to genes, okay? These are Karaites in the Crimea, in basically Ukraine, okay? And as you can see, they're Jews, and they practice the Khazarian version of Judaism, okay? The first impression, okay?
The first impression one gains is a striking similarity between certain privileged positions held by Khazar Jews in Hungary and in Poland in those early days. Both the Hungarian and Polish sources refer to Jews employed as mint masters, administrators of the royal revenue, controllers of the salt monopoly, tax collectors, and money lenders, i.e. bankers. This parallel suggests a common origin of those two immigrant communities, and as we can trace the origins of the bulk of Hungarian Jewry to the Magyar Khazar nexus, the conclusion seems self-evident.
Okay, all right, thank you. Thank you. All right, so does this make sense, okay? There's a lot of evidence to suggest like the Khazars were Jews. And this is really important to understand because guess what? The Khazar Jews, they will take over Europe, okay? And you have three different types of Jews. You have the Sephardic Jews, which basically are the Jews who were expelled from Spain, okay? These are real Jews. You have the Mazari Jews who were in the Islamic world. Again, these are real Jews. The blue, these Ashkenazi Jews, they're not real Jews. They're converted, okay? This is something you're not to discuss at all, even though the evidence is so stark. The other issue with the Ashkenazi is that they make up 80% of all Jews in the world today, okay? And so you go to Israel and they say, it's like, we're here because this is what God promised to us. That's nonsense. But again, you're not to discuss this, even though, again, the evidence is stark, all right? All right, so this conspiracy also helps us, again, explain the JFK assassination, okay? As well as, so this is the book, King Kill. You can read it online for yourself. It's by Dowdert and Hoffman. And it goes into why the Freemasons would want to kill JFK, the sort of ritual sacrifice ideas behind it, okay? 9/11, all right? Why did 9/11 happen? Because it's all part of this grand plan. 9/11 happened because America needed to go to Middle East and destroy the Middle East to create Pax Judaica. And that's exactly what they did. Again, Al-Qaeda is, yes, I understand Al-Qaeda did 9/11, but then why did you have to go destroy Libya? Why do you have to go destroy Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria, okay? So, and the last place that they need to destroy is Iran in order to achieve the Pax Judaica project, okay? ISIS, guys. ISIS is, you know, these fanatical Muslims, and they hate Israel, but they never attacked Israel. Okay? They've never ever in their history attacked Israel. That's why they're probably controlled by the Mossad. Okay? And these guys go around and destroy the entire Middle East. But they never attacked Israel. Okay? Really strange how this happens. Okay? And all this war on the terror, what it does is it creates all these millions of migrants to Europe, which is destabilizing European society. And these societies, look, Libya was once a middle-class, prosperous society, and now you have these slave markets. You've got these millions of Africans who are sold as slaves in Libya. It is in anarchy now. Okay, so 2015, you have all these immigrants going to Europe, and the Europeans are like, we don't want these immigrants because what are we going to do with these immigrants? They're poor, we don't have the money, we don't have the system in order to accommodate these immigrants. And Angela Merkel, who is the leader of Europe at this time, the German Chancellor, she says, we can do this, guys! We can do this! And it was it has become a dumpster fire, okay? And like, guys, in 2015, everyone knew this was gonna happen. Everyone knew that if you brought in millions of immigrants who did not speak English, who did not share European cultural values, and who didn't have much education, this would happen, okay? Europeans are not as open as the Americans are. Okay, and even these immigrants are causing problems in America, right? And at no point did the Europeans say, screw you, America, you did this to us. At no point, okay? And you could argue like, okay, maybe it's bureaucratic incompetence, but at the same time, it could also be part of the grand plan to create Jack's Judaica. This is October 7th, when Hamas went and killed a lot of Israelis. And this, of course, led to what's happening in Gaza today. Okay? And what's happening in Gaza today led to all these protests for Palestine around the world, and a surge in anti-Semitism. And this surge in anti-Semitism will ultimately lead to killings around the world. So this is Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia, where if you read the news, two Islamic State supporters killed 15 Jews celebrating a Jewish festival in Bondi Beach. And quite honestly, we can expect more of this to happen in the future. And you can say this is all just an accident, or you can say, well, you know, it's part of the plan, guys. Okay? These are the red heifers. And these red heifers people spent millions of dollars to genetically create perfect red heifers because nature doesn't produce perfect red heifers. And what people say, the rumor is that these red heifers have been sacrificed already. So now they're getting ready to rebuild Solomon's Temple, which will be the site of the world government, okay? Pax Judaica. Let's go to Silicon Valley, okay? Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, how do they become billionaires? Guys, I don't think they're smarter than us. In fact, I don't think they're that smart, okay? Steve Jobs is a smart guy. I will say Steve Jobs is a really smart guy. But these other guys are pretty normal guys. How do they become billionaires? All right, so Silicon Valley. People say that Silicon Valley is a hotbed of innovation. That is complete and utter nonsense. The hotbed of innovation is the American military because they spent billions of dollars on innovation, okay? So these are computers that developed for war purposes, okay? For the nuclear bomb, to fight World War II, to fight the Cold War. They spent billions of dollars to develop this technology. And then what happened was this technology became smaller and smaller, and so much smaller that Steve Wozniak was able to take this technology and create an own personal computer. Now this is kind of strange because this R&D was funded by the American government. How did this one guy, Steve Wozniak, how was he able to take all this knowledge and then go and make his own computer? What did the American military let him? In fact, what's really strange is that while Steve Wozniak was building his own computer, which will become the Apple computer, he was working for Hewlett Packard. In other words, everything he did should have been the IP of Hewlett Packard. And in fact, Steve Wozniak said to his boss, listen, you guys pay me, you guys train me. If you want this PC that I'm going to create, I'm happy to give it to you. And Hewlett Packard said to him, no, keep it for yourself. That's really strange, guys. What corporation is so generous? Why would they do that? Well, there are three good reasons, okay? The first reason is that if the American military were to promote personal computers, every American in the world would say, screw you, okay? You guys are the military. You guys are responsible for the Vietnam War. You guys are responsible for millions of deaths around the world. Why would I take a computer from you knowing that it's from the military? You're gonna use a computer to spy on me, man. You're going to use this computer to turn me into a robot. There's no way I'm going to touch this computer. But it's coming from Steve Jobs. That's different, right? Oh, Steve Jobs, he's a visionary. He's messianic. Of course I'll buy this personal computer from Steve Jobs, okay? Second is, at this time in history, America is at war with Soviet Union, okay? Which system is better? Communism or capitalism? And so you want, so if you said that, okay, we're the government and we spent billions of dollars to build this technology, that proves you communism is better, right? But if it's like, no, it's these guys working by themselves in Silicon Valley in the garage, they get all these ideas for themselves, that proves capitalism is better, okay? That proves entrepreneurship is better. And the last reason, and this is the most important, is if the US government built this knowledge, right, it belongs to American people. So how do you monetize public knowledge? Well, you create private companies controlled by secret societies. That makes perfect sense, right? And we can now understand all these guys, Bill Gates, Elon Musk, they're front people. They're just poster boys. They're not really in command. It's secret societies that's really in control, okay? Sorry. All right. Another example is Google. So the American military spent billions of dollars, trillions of dollars of taxpayer money to build this fiber optic network, which is the base of the internet, okay? With this fiber optic network, you couldn't have the internet. And then these two guys in their 20s took over this network and created Google. It's the same thing as, you know, the government spends billions of dollars building a highway, okay? And then you come along and say, I'm going to build a toll booth. Same thing. Why were they allowed to do that? But not only that, but now they're slowly building their own underwater fiber optic network. So they're basically privatizing this network created by the American military. Yes, I understand they're spending their own money to build this network, but it's the American military that spent taxpayer money to build, to do the R&D for all this, okay? That's where the real value is. Mark Zuckerberg, guys. Look, he's not that smart, okay? And look, the other thing is, he was 19 years old, he stole this idea from his Harvard classmates, and then he got billions of dollars from venture capitalists to start Facebook. Where did he get this money? Facebook is not a great idea, right? Social media, great, but I mean, like, I could also start a social media company. You could start a social media company. The other thing is, like, Yahoo at one point offered this guy $1 billion to buy Facebook. We'll give you $1 billion. That's a lot of money, right? You would have taken, I would have taken it. But Mark Zuckerberg's like, nah, I wouldn't know what to do with the money. That's retarded. Why did you start Facebook in the first place but to make money? Okay. So you have these three questions. First of all, why are these people giving him money? He's just a 19-year-old guy. He's a Harvard dropout. That's all he is. No experience, nothing. Second question is, if you're someone who's that young and you succeed so much, you would suffer from hubris, from ego. You make a lot of mistakes, right? The guy's never failed in his life. The third thing, of course, is I understand why Amazon, Google, and Apple are successful, okay? Apple has Steve Jobs. Google controls the world search. Amazon controls buying things, right? What does Facebook do? It doesn't do anything, right? So how can we explain why Mark Zuckerberg is so successful? Well, there's actually an explanation. This, guys. Okay? It's all part of it's possible, okay? I'm not saying it is true, but it's all part of the grand conspiracy to create an AI surveillance state, which is what Pax Judaica is. This guy, okay?
They look the same.
They look exactly the same. They are the same. They look like clones of each other. No personality, no ideas of their own. They're just robots. How did they become so successful? Right? And OpenAI, guess what, guys? Makes no money, but at the same time, they get trillions of dollars from investors to build data centers. Okay? And these data centers allow you to make really nice pictures and videos online that do nothing, okay? Why is all this money being spent except one day to create a surveillance state, okay? That's what makes sense. The idea that these things exist so that you can play on the computer makes no sense. But these things exist in order to one day have complete control over what you do, what you think, and how you behave. That makes sense now, okay? Pax Judaica. All right, Elon Musk, okay? I understand millions of people worship this guy. I don't know how this guy makes money, okay? If you look at Tesla and Facebook, and you came in and says, listen, there are these two companies, Facebook and Tesla, would you invest in them? I'd be like, no! Facebook, there's no business model here. I don't understand why people need social media. And I don't understand how Mark Zuckerberg, how he's going to make money in the future. Elon Musk, he gets all his money from government subsidies. Tesla doesn't make any money, man. And the guy's a moron. Okay? But Neuralink, okay? Why is he proposing Neuralink? It's part of transhumanism, right? All right. So Jacob Frank, guys. All right? Everything goes back to Jacob Frank. What does Jacob Frank believe? He believes that what matters is, at the end of the world, is the spirit becomes flesh. You understand? The spirit becomes flesh. What matters is not the mind. What matters is matter. Second thing he says is, listen, your laws tell me to fast, to suffer. I don't want that crap. I want to enjoy my life. Okay? And the third thing is, this world cannot have been created by God. It was created by Satan. Because why would God allow us to die? Therefore, we must defy Satan by living forever. Okay? Now, if we understand Frank, we understand the idea of transhumanism. Okay? This is a guy with his own bionic eye that records things. This is a guy with his own arm. This is a new trend in the future. What is transhumanism? The capacity to live forever. Okay? All right? So, this is the future that we're looking at. If you're a rich person, if you're a powerful person, this is what you will experience. You will experience longevity, health, and beauty. Okay? You will have organ transplants that keep you young. You will have stem cell therapy to repair any cancer, any diseases. You have gene therapy. You have blood transfusion. You have replacement bodies, okay? You will be 20 years old forever. You have great sex. You'll live forever, okay? This is if you are a billionaire. Everyone else? Well, first of all, you become a cyborg, where you are now specialized for a certain function, okay? They're going to put microchips in your body so you can become a better accountant, okay? They'll turn your arms into cyborg, bionic arms, so you can be better construction worker. Who knows, okay? Microchips inside of you, the mark of the beast. What do these microchips do? They are digital ID and digital currency. And guess what, guys? If you're not happy, they'll know about it, and they'll give you drugs to make you happy. If you think this won't happen? They've already have everything in place, okay? Addictive drugs to control mood. Oh, and like, if you're lonely, don't worry, man. That's what AI is for. You have an AI girlfriend and boyfriend. And you know what? Most people would prefer an AI boyfriend and girlfriend, okay? Okay? And then it'll be an individual matrix where you live in your own world. So think of World of Warcraft, but in the real world, okay? Where everyone who's your friend, your entire family, it's all just AI generated. Okay? You live in a perfect world. Okay, guys. Now let's look at how Pax Judaica profits. How they control the world. Well, AI surveillance systems and AI data centers. Israel will become the leader in that, okay? Because for AI data centers to be effective, they need to be safe. Everywhere else, there's going to be wars, right? Not Israel, because Israel has nuclear weapons. So all the major technology companies will be based in Israel in the future. Weaponry, security, private militias to protect you if you're at war. Bioweapons and biowarfare, psychological and information warfare, Israel is really good at that. Intelligence, espionage, and sabotage. Mossad is the world's best intelligence agency. Financing, okay? So if you want to go to war, you'll be financed by the Israelis. Trade access, transhumanism for the global elite, okay? This is how, in the future, they will control the world. Does that make sense? All right. But we don't know how much of the world will last because something called the magnetic pole excursion, and this will usher in something called the mini ice age. Okay? So maybe God is not happy with Pax Judaica. Maybe we know no one can defeat Pax Judaica except God himself. And maybe God will intervene, but not in the way that it says in the Bible. Okay? We don't know. This is all speculation. Believe whatever you want. Okay? So, any questions? Does this make sense to you guys? Pax Judaica, welcome to the future. Okay, all right. Let me go over some Substack. So I want to thank the founding members of my Substack because they're extremely generous and they've left some questions and comments, and so I will answer them now, okay? So could you help me, Amber, by reading the questions?
Okay.
So I can rest a bit.
I'm an avid viewer of all your lectures on YouTube and your content on Substack, and I want to say a huge thank you for the incredibly important content you are sharing with humanity. I'm a 27-year-old Jew living in Israel. I oppose any Zionist idea and any nation state whatsoever, including Israel and including Palestine. I would like to know whether you think it is advisable for the younger generation of Jews, both those living in Israel and those who do not, to live in Israel. On the one hand, anti-Semitism is likely to increase the diaspora, which will lead many Jews to think that Israel is the safest place for us. And the chain of events that are likely to unfold will cause Jews to believe that the Messiah is just around the corner. On the other hand, we are heading towards living here in a technocratic ghetto of surveillance, digital ID systems, and so on. I'm sure that many sane Jews who simply want to live in peace regardless of religion or race follow you, your wonderful work, and would like to know what you think is the right course of action for us. I don't know whether this question is priority for you to address in a video, and it's completely understandable if you choose not to share it. But even a written response from you would be more than enough. Thank you very much.
Okay, so thank you, Daniel, for your comment. Listen, I think Pastor Jacob is not about the Jews. It's about these evil people who want to control the world, and they want to use Jews and Israel as a tool to do so. And a lot of Jews recognize this fact. A lot of Jews recognize that traditionally they've been used by empires in the past. And this is a great question. And I'll say certain things. The first thing is that I believe that the people who are most resistant to Pax Judaica, the people who stand up and fight Pax Judaica, will actually be Jews themselves. Jews have a great tradition of being on the front lines of resistance for justice, for humanity, for all that is good in the world. So I believe that Jews will play a very important part in the resistance against Pax Judaica. Second thing that I will say is that things look dark, but what we've learned this semester are three things, okay? The first is that evil must triumph so that good may rise. There must be total darkness for the light to shine. And all hope must end so that we can become hope ourselves. Okay? So please remember that there's a divine spark in us. And when all hope seems lost, that spark will remind you of who you are. And it will lead you into the light. Okay? So I don't have specific instructions or ideas on how to counter Pax Judaica. But I think that being aware of Pax Judaica and being aware that we individually have the capacity to resist is fundamental to what is to come. Okay? So thanks to Daniel for the question. Okay, all right. This is from Kevin Joe. Can you read, Amber?
Okay. I first want to thank whatever gave you the courage to continue past tribulations, maybe Mrs. Jiang, and continuing to teach. Your will and dedication to learning and teaching is monumental compared to the attention spans of newer generations. I think I speak for most of us who watch but you have definitely made a historical impact on us. It seems transnational capitalism, Frankism, has weaved its web for hundreds of years, turning into the monster it is today. What are humanity's possible counters? Do you think it is religion? Will we ever make a cyclic turn away from capitalism? How long would it take to undo this movement? Thank you, Never Spock.
Okay,
Never
Spock. So you're absolutely right, okay? So thank you for this question, okay? The Frankists have spent centuries preparing for today, and that's why they win, because they're willing to think long term, they're willing to work together, they're willing to make necessary sacrifices to achieve heaven on earth in their eyes. Okay? And so we need to, if you want to defeat them, you need to become like that. Okay? You need to think long term. You need to make sacrifices. Okay? It's something that you cannot defeat in one day or 10 years or 100 years. You have to believe in yourself. You have to believe in humanity. And you have to respond by working hard, by making sacrifices, okay? By learning, all right? So that's the only way forward. Also, what we also know is that when empires come into being, that's when they end, okay? So the moment Pax Judaea comes into being, it has to end, because Pax Judaea becomes arrogant. It becomes obvious. It becomes narrow-minded. It becomes insular, okay? And so Pax Judaica will fall. We don't know how long Pax Judaica will last. It may not even last that long, okay? Maybe 10 years, 20 years, who knows, okay? But it's a very unstable system. So what we need to do is look ahead and think about what humanity looks like after Pax Judaica. Also, I hate to say this, but it looks like the world is about to end. Wars everywhere, destruction everywhere. Maybe 9% of humanity gets wiped out. Okay, so we need to face this fact and prepare for what the future looks like after the great flood that is coming. Okay, and we have to use our imagination. And later on, as I continue my teaching, I will propose different scenarios, different solutions. Okay, but this is a long-term project. The Frankists spent a lot of time conceptualizing how to conquer the world. We have to imagine how we can rebuild the world together. All right, this is from Wao Enkidu.
You speak a lot about the monad and Gnostic teachings. Do you see this as a possible emerging major religion? Can it be? It seems like these massive expansion, like the Bronze Age, Muslim conquest, and implosions, like the Bronze Age collapse, and the French Revolution that repeat throughout history are almost the way civilization matures for those who participate. The same way a person grows from facing the overcoming trauma. Are societies who participate in a collapse and come out the other side better off for it? Lastly, who are your favorite English language poets apart from Milton?
Okay, I'll answer the last question first. I was an English major at Yale, okay, so I know about English poetry. Milton is definitely my favorite poet. Then you have John Keats. William Shakespeare is also really good, okay? Societies rise and fall so that there can be creativity in the world, okay? It sucks if a society lasts for a long, long time. We know because we're in China, okay? Societies are meant to rise and fall so that new societies may rise and fall as well. Parents must die so that children can be independent, okay? So I understand death, destruction, war, these are terrible concepts, but they're all part and parcel of the human experience. We should stop seeing them as negative things and just as things that happen to us, and we should respond accordingly, okay? So if you think about the Bronze Age collapse, yes, it was a terrible event, but it led to the founding of Israel. It led to the Greeks. It led to the rise of Persia. And these three different civilizations were periods of tremendous creativity in the human experience. And it seems as though we've come to at the end of a cycle, okay? So even though there's destruction will mean rebirth. Even though there is stagnation will lead to creativity. It's all part of a cycle, okay? The human experience is one that is extremely dynamic, extremely resilient. So even though there's death always leads to life. Okay? All right, this is from Demi.
Professor, you have a remarkable way of synthesizing the best parts of spiritual practice while mitigating the worst parts, dogma, lack of critical thought. Was there a moment in life where you had your spiritual epiphany? I imagine Dante's Inferno helped.
Okay, so I think that my superpower has always been my capacity for self-reflection. Ever since I was young, I've been able to stare in the mirror and look at who I am and said, this is who I am, this is what I like about myself, this is what I don't like about myself. So I'm constantly in a process of self-reflection and self-rejuvenation and self-invention, okay? I've done it all my life, okay? So I was a poor immigrant in Toronto. I was bullied a lot when I was young. I didn't like that, so I worked hard, got into Yale. And then after I got from Yale, I thought that I would succeed in this world. I didn't succeed, so I looked at myself in the mirror and I recognized that there were limitations to my Yale education. And I changed that, okay? I started to reinvent myself. I did a lot of things that were experimental, but which I am forever thankful for. For example, I did stand-up comedy for a time. I did skydiving. I did parkour. So I am constantly in the process of self-exploration, self-reflection, and self-reinvention, which is what leads to creativity. Okay, so I wouldn't say there's a particular moment when my life changed. I would say that, oh, I've always been like that. Okay, 5 years from now, I'll probably be a different person from I am today. I'm not content with just being who I am. I'm constantly looking to improve myself. And that means constantly engaging in a process of self-reflection, but that means also engaging in a process of self-doubt and sometimes even self-hatred, okay? So even though, you know, like online, I'm famous and people appreciate my teaching, I don't really care about these things, okay? For me, what's important is, am I improving? Am I being creative? Am I contributing to the progress of humanity? These are the questions that animate me, okay? And I love Dante, by the way. Everyone should read Dante. And next semester, I'm teaching the great books, and we'll spend a lot of time on Dante, okay? All right, keep on reading.
Hi, Professor. I've always loved history, and it's been a blessing finding your teachings. I wish I had a class like this in school. Growing up with a Zionist mother, from that perspective, I thought what she spoke of would never really happen. I try to help combat Zionism and those oppressed, but it feels hopeless. Do you think there is any possibility to change or stop what is currently happening? Or has Zionism embedded into many aspects of society?
Okay, Zionism has won out because the people who believe in Zionism are the ones who are willing to make most sacrifices, the ones who are the most energetic, who are willing to work together to achieve this vision. So an example is, if you look at all these welfare societies in the world, there's only one wealthy society that has a fertility rate above replacement level, and that's Israel, okay? It's above 2, possibly 3. Every other nation is like 1 or 1.5, okay? So it shows us that regardless of how we feel about Israel and Zionism, people in Israel love being Israeli, and they want a better future for the nation, and they believe in a better future for the nation. Young people making the sacrifice necessary to have a family shows you the health, vitality, and energy of a nation, okay? But at the same time, and I keep on saying this, when Zionism has become an empire, when it becomes Pax Judaica, that's when it will fall very quickly. And I also believe that a lot of Jews, a lot of Israelis don't want an empire. They just want to live normal lives. And the fact that they become the center of the world, the fact that they're causing all this war, chaos, and conflict around the world to benefit from, a lot of them are going to rebel, okay? So I can imagine that once Pax Judaica it comes into being, you're going to have a massive civil war throughout Israel. Alright? Okay, Dan?
What is your favorite food, and what can we expect, or not, between semesters and over the break time? Thank you for all the great lectures this semester.
Okay, my favorite food is Japanese. I love sashimi, but I also just love food in general. I'm Cantonese, so I just love eating in general. They say that Cantonese people live to eat, okay? And that's certainly true for me. Okay, so after this class, I go on a 2-week break, and then I come back to teach 2 classes, game theory and geopolitics. So what we'll be doing is looking at current events and using game theory to understand how and why they're happening, okay? So we'll be looking at things like Venezuela, Iran, Israel, okay? So that'll be a fun class. I'll also be teaching the great books. So we'll be looking at Dante, Homer, Plato, Shakespeare, Milton. Okay, so 2 weeks, there'll be 2 week break, but in January, we start 2 new classes, and they'll be fun, they'll be interesting. I hope that you enjoy them, okay? All right, this is from Oz.
It's been a pleasure to read and listen to your work. The education and contextual framing is super interesting. I am especially inspired by the original works you quoted, which illustrates how well read you are. I'm sure you have already heard this, so I'm hoping that writing a book is already on your radar. Half the works is done, and you have a proven audience. Start with putting all your transcripts and essays into AI with some guidance and ask it to create a book. Then you can iterate. All you will need beyond that is perfecting citations and ensuring there are no errors. But that won't change the messages you have brought to life.
Okay, so thanks, Oz, for the encouragement. I am planning to write a book. Okay, now I've written many books in the past before. I published 2 books, so I know the book writing process. I have an agent, so it won't be hard for me to publish a book. And as Oz says, I do have an audience. I do have a global audience, tens of thousands who would love to read the book. But I want to create the best book possible. So that requires meditation, that requires discussion, that requires experimentation. So I understand the book writing process. And the way I write books is different from how others write books. Okay, I have lots of writer friends, they're extremely successful. I can't do what they do. I mean, they spend like 10 hours a day writing books. I am much more imaginative, I'm much more intuitive. I like to take long walks in the park and just play around ideas. Okay, so I will write a book. I am very efficient. When I set a goal, I go and do it. But I want to write the best book possible for everyone. I see myself first and foremost as a writer. Most people see me as a teacher, but I'm first and foremost a writer. And so I want to take tremendous pride in whatever I produce. I want this book, no matter what I write, to stand the test of time. I want people to read it 100 years from now. Okay. I love reading books. I love books. Books to me are just as alive as people. When I read books, what makes me distinct as a reader is when I read books, I'm able to perceive or go into the soul of the person. Okay, that's why I know Jacob Frank so much. When I read Jacob Frank, I'm like I understand how he thinks. Okay, I'm not judging him. Okay, he's an evil guy, but I'm not judging him. Okay. But I know how he thinks, I know how he feels, I know what he's doing. And that's what allows me tremendous insight into history. And that's why I'm able to create really interesting content for everyone. So I love reading, I love writing. If I'm gonna write a book, I want it to stand the test of time, I want people to read it and be forever changed by it, okay? All right, so that is it. Thank you so much, guys. Next semester, we start game theory and geopolitics. Okay.